You are now listening to the Invited Podcast with Cedric Harris and Tia McClain. You've officially been invited.
You are now tuned into the Invited Podcast. This week, we invite Kaya J, a certified personal trainer in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, often referred to as BJJ. We'll be saying that throughout the rest of the interview. She's an athlete from Mississippi. Kaya currently holds a purple belt in BJJ and has dedicated the last 5 years of her life to helping others reach their goals through fitness. She realized how much her life changed by focusing on exercise and nutrition and by being disciplined. And she wants to do that same thing for others. So Sed and I are excited to learn about Kaya and her journey in martial arts and fitness and nutrition and everything to strive to live a more meaningful and full life. Kaya, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you guys for having me.
Of course.
And we're so excited to talk to you. And for those that don't know, can you just explain to them and give them a little background on what BJJ is and then how it may differ from other forms of martial arts?
Okay, so what I try to do is kind of related to what people see on the internet. Because most people, when I say, all right, I'm doing jiu-jitsu, they think I'm doing like karate or taekwondo or something. My mama, she just figured out what jiu-jitsu was. So if you've ever watched the UFC, when they end up on the ground and they're like throwing submissions and they're grappling and like trying to hold on to each other, that's jiu-jitsu that they're doing on the ground.
Okay.
So it's a form of grappling, pretty similar to wrestling. And you get the takedown, you end up on the ground, and the goal is to get this person to submit or make them go to sleep, like choke them out or break something. So they really have the option. You have the option to submit. You always have the option to just like tap out.
Yeah.
But if not, you know, it becomes a more lethal form of martial arts.
Have you ever knocked somebody out or broke something?
I've never broken anything on an opponent, not on purpose. And I have a couple of teammates that prefer to just go to sleep as opposed to tap. So they'll just go to sleep. It's quick, too. It's not like on the movies where they like go to sleep and then they don't wake back up. You notice when somebody's like going limp.
Right.
And you just let go and they'll wake right back up. It takes like a few seconds for them to realize. They wake up and they're like, oh, what happened?
Oh my gosh.
And then on the other end of that, have you ever been put to sleep? Like, how's that feel?
Yes. So this is how you know you're going to sleep. First, your fingertips get super tingly and then you feel like stars. And that's how you know, all right, I'm getting too far down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
The timing for like, how long it takes to go to sleep. A good choke, you can go to sleep in like 7 seconds. If it's in there nice and tight, you can be sleeping like 7 seconds. So.
Oh my gosh.
And so I'm sure that for me, I have like a picture in my head just of people going to sleep now. And it's just like, some people would ask like, why would anyone want to do this? But like, what about the sport excites you? What about this makes you happy?
Well, pretty much to me, I think of it like a really big chess game. It's a little different because you're moving your body too, but it's really like a chess game. Like two people show up and, you know, they show up at their best and they got a certain set of moves they got to make, but there's always a counter to the move and there's always like a counter to the counter. And so on the outside looking in, you just see people like trying to go at each other, but the two people are really kind of playing this game because we all know the same moves.
Mm-hmm.
Like we all, if we're the same build, rank, whatever, ideally, we should all know the same moves. Mm-hmm. We should all know like, all right, there's a small window where I can get out of this, or there's a small window where I can attack. And so that part really excites me.
And so we mentioned in the like intro that this has been something that's more recent or like in your past 5 years. So what kind of pushed you into BJJ like overall?
So I was in school. Mm-hmm. I was in school for engineering and I eventually like got an internship to just work as a mechanical engineer. And I tried a couple of classes just because I didn't like the whole idea of going to work, then going home, playing a game and then going to sleep, then going back to work the next day. It was a bit much. It was a lot on my mental. It was new to me, like doing the same thing over and over every day. So I was like, yeah, I want to like mix it up. So when I got back to school, I like started looking at, into like sports and fitness. And I was like, all right, I think I want to like start exploring these things. And once I started, I never stopped.
That's awesome. Were you an athlete in your childhood?
Yeah, I played sports growing up. I played basketball, softball. I ran track.
Everything.
Yeah, pretty much everything I could do to not be at home, I tried to do. And when I got to college, I was kind of missing that. I was missing the competitive aspect because I'm super competitive. Mm-hmm. I'm competitive in like stupid stuff. Like I want to win everything.
I feel that.
And so speaking like the competition piece of it, can you walk us through like what's it like to prepare for a tournament? Mm-hmm. And what's it like to compete against others? Like once you're in there, like what is that feeling like?
So to prepare, I'm actually going through a phase right now where I'm preparing for another one. So I had a tournament like 2 weeks ago, got out of the prep phase, and then I got invited to two more tournaments, which are like 6 weeks out. And okay. So I'm starting to enter that prep phase again. And to prepare, it's a little bit different these days because I know what the feeling is. I know what I'm going to feel. I know what I'm going to feel anxious. I know what I need to be working on. I know what's important competition-wise. So to prepare, I work on my strengths. I try to I don't learn jujitsu. I try to build on what I already have. So I'm like building on the things that I'm good at. I'm good at wrestling. I'm good at playing on top. I'm good at, you know, just like dominating on top. So I build on that. And then making sure my conditioning is A1 because it's a lot on the cardio, and like strength and conditioning is key for this. So that's what my focus is for the next 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the feeling like getting in there to compete, like I love it. Most people like shy away from it. Mm-hmm. Because in the training room, we're all nice to each other. Like,
yeah,
we'll give you the chance to tap, we'll let you work your pass and stuff like that. But in competition, we agree to show up at our best and we legit try to kill each other. Like, it's a real thing. Like, we are fighting for real. This is,
yeah,
I'm not holding back. This person's not holding back. We're going at each other as hard as we can. And we're showing our best stuff to like, you know, make the crowd pop and make sure that we put on the show so people actually want to watch. Mm-hmm. But so it's a little scary and it makes you anxious because you always got those doubts of what if I'm not good enough? What if this person is going to beat me? What if I get something broken or if I fall asleep on camera and then they get to, you know, put it on Instagram and show all their friends. All of that stuff makes you nervous, but I've gotten used to it. I have a few patterns that I repeat. Like I get super nervous at a certain time in the training camp. I get super nervous like the day of, but then once I step on the mats, I can't think of anything. Yeah, it's go time. I can't think of a single thing.
Yeah.
So that's how I sum up the competition feeling.
And so Kaya just mentioned that a few weeks ago she had a tournament, but I do want to express that was this the UFC Fight Pass with a female only competition. So this was a huge competition in Mexico. So how does that happen where like you get invited? Like what is the actual process for a giant fight like that one?
So this is completely new to me. This is for sure the first. Like, this is the biggest show that I've ever been on to date so far. Yeah. And it was super exciting because I didn't get invited right away. So there were seven fighters in my bracket that got invited. Mm-hmm. I had to fly to LA and qualify. Like, I had to win a tournament to get in the tournament.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty new to the sport. I've been training for like 5 years, but I just hopped onto the competition scene like last year.
Okay.
Like professional competition scene where you can start making money, you can start making a name. I just hopped onto that scene. And so I went to LA. Nobody even really knew me much there. Like I'm just a nobody from Alabama. Like I train in Alabama. We got people from like New York and LA. They're down there. And I had to win that tournament. So I had three matches. I won that tournament, which gave me an auto invite to that, the bigger tournament. But now, though, it's looking like because I did have a really good showing, a really good performance, mm-hmm. I'm just going to like start seeing more invites to bigger shows. Yes.
So. Bigger and better things.
Yes.
Okay.
And so if someone, like say you're in a match and someone doesn't tap out or someone doesn't break anything, how's a winner determined? Like, how long is the showing, and like, how does someone win?
Okay. If there's, so let's, usually the matches are from 8 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
There are some like really wild matches where they do like 30 minutes or a no time limit. That's a thing too. So no time limit, meaning you go until somebody submits or like calls out or whatever.
Yeah.
We've seen those go on for like 76 minutes.
That is
Yeah, just straight, just going at it. Yeah.
That's wild.
Talk about conditioning.
Yeah.
Seriously. But my particular match, they're 10 minute rounds. Mm-hmm. And the last competition I did is called EBI Rules. It's Eddie Bravo Invitationals. And the winner is determined in overtime. So with the EBI overtimes, you have two positions that you can choose from. So you pretty much get put in a bad spot, or you get put in a good spot, and you gotta either finish it or hold on to it for longer than your opponent does.
Mm. Okay.
So it's like you can win on ride time, or you can win with a submission in overtime. Mm-hmm. And there's three rounds of that.
10 minutes is a long time.
Yeah.
It is. But the overtime rounds are like 2 minutes apiece.
Okay.
But still, you just fought for 10 minutes. You fought for 10 minutes, and now you got 2 minutes on somebody's back, or 2 minutes trying to defend a choke or something. And then you got to do it three more times. So it's a lot.
Exhausting is what it sounds like. And I also just kind of wanted to be clear. So are you in Alabama right now? You said that you are, like, you came from Alabama to LA. Are you in Alabama?
Yeah, I'm in Decatur, Alabama right now.
Okay. So what brought you there? Because you went to Mississippi State, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, what took you there?
So we talked a little bit about the internship. The first internship I did was in Mississippi. It was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And I really didn't like it. I hated it. And I was like, maybe I don't want to be an engineer, but let me try another job to be sure. Mm-hmm. So I applied, got another internship. I got a couple of offers, one from Georgia, another company in Mississippi, and then this company in Alabama. Mm. And I went with the one, for some reason, I went with one in Alabama. Don't know why. I don't even remember what my reasoning was. I was just like, oh, this looks cool. Mm-hmm. Let me try this company. And I tried it, and I had on like a jujitsu shirt. I had on a shirt, and I was walking through the cabinet shop, and this guy was like, hey, you do jujitsu? You should come try 10th Planet Muscle Shoals. Super weird story. He's like, come try 10th Planet Muscle Shoals. I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I can't really like get down with all these other gyms. Like, I don't know what the environment is like. Yeah. I'm in Alabama. Like, I don't really know. So I go, and instantly it's like a good fit. Like, they playing music that I like. Everybody's cool. Yeah. Everybody's like super welcoming, and not like they're not mean or anything like that. So I was like, dang, I like training here. So I would like work and then just go train every day. And eventually I convinced the job that I was working for, I convinced them to let me do like a part-time junior engineer position so that I could come back up here to train and I could finish school online. I like somehow weaseled my way into the system, and then I eventually just quit and started doing jujitsu.
And so you talk about how like you're kind of new to the sport overall, but also new to competition. How hard was it for you to actually learn like what to do, and like what was that learning curve like?
I feel like I picked up most things pretty fast. I have some really amazing coaches. Like, they don't just tell me to do a move, they explain the concepts around it, and I can like naturally just like wrap my head around it and get my body to do certain things. So like starting off, of course, when you start off with something new, you suck at it, and everybody does. That's what I tell new people that's coming in. It's like, don't worry, the first 6 months of this is just you trying to survive. So there's, don't worry about submissions, don't worry about like trying to beat this other person. You probably won't. Like, you just feel good if you don't get tapped, you know, 6 times in a round.
Yeah.
Stupid about that. So starting off, I was that person. I was super aggressive, but that really didn't do me any good. I was like, you know, going hard nowhere, like just going hard to a place just to get tapped.
Yeah.
So the biggest learning curve was learning to calm down and think about what you're doing. And then once I figured that out, like, oh, this is a chess game. Like, these people know things that I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a timing, there's balance, there's so many other aspects of it, as opposed to like just thinking it's all about being aggressive. And so the biggest learning curve was, all right, calm down. Don't be so aggressive and figure out, like, how do you get out of this? And don't panic. So I eventually, what really like helped me excel was during quarantine, I got locked in over here with a bunch of, he was like, well, the gym is going to close. And if you want to train, you can be here. We'll all sleep in here. Like, we got rooms and stuff. We'll all sleep in here and we'll train every day at the same time. Oh, wow. Or you can just go home and that's fine. But like, we're not leaving this place.
Yeah.
So we all like locked in and trained every day at the same time. I got to train with like three black belts, a brown belt and a purple belt. And I was just a blue belt at the time. So I was getting my butt handed to me a lot. And that's what really like helped me excel and grow.
Mm-hmm. Dedication.
I know. I have two follow-up questions to that.
Yeah.
One is, you mentioned the belts and you're a purple belt. How long did it take you typically to go from belt to belt? And like, how many more belts do you have to like the top belt? And then the second would be for the quarantine piece. How long were y'all locked in the gym together?
Yeah, I always tell people that story and they're just like, what? You did what? But so belt levels, there was white, blue, purple, brown, and black.
Okay.
Oh. And to get a black, to go from white to black takes about 14 years for the average person. So it's not like the Taekwondo where you just show up to class and you show up and you get the belt. No, like they actually have to see like improvements and stuff. And so it took me, I've been training for close to 5 years now. It took me a year and a half to get my blue belt. And then whatever the time is in between to get my purple belt. I got my purple belt 4 years in. So okay. About two years or so. But some people can get them quicker. Some people, it takes a really long time. Again, the average time, I train every day. Like I'm full-time training and that's as fast as I can get it, you know? But the average person, it takes about 14 years to get a black belt.
Wow.
So it's real dedication there.
Yeah.
Also the second piece of this, how long was I locked in? About 2.5 weeks.
Okay.
After a while. Yeah. It wasn't the entire time, even though we stayed in here for 2 weeks. I'm actually here right now because I like the background. We stayed in here for 2 weeks and we like, this is when we were like taking it super serious. This is when we really didn't know what was going on. And
yeah,
we just like, all right, whatever, no matter what, we're going to be training. And then when we saw like everybody outside, just, you know, the people across the street, we're in like an industrial complex. The people across the street are like outside sharing cigarettes and stuff. We're like, all right, this might not be as serious as we thought.
Yeah.
These people are like, you know, they out there sharing cigarettes. And so we went home, like everybody just went home, but the gym was still shut down. We just had access to train every day.
Okay.
So for the first like 2.5 weeks, we all stayed in this. It was like seven of us. We stayed in this building.
Putting in work.
And work.
I have a side question before my real question. So this is a random thought I just had. So like, if you're training or like you're sparring with somebody, how do you know if it transitions into like a real fight? Cause like, aren't you allowed to do certain things? Like how, like, what are some of the rules that you would say, okay, now I know, like we're serious.
Like you mean like if there was like striking allowed and stuff like that?
Yeah. So like what is like allowed and like what's not in a sparring match?
Okay. Well, there are a few rules. Like if we're just sparring or if we're just training, period, there's no striking unless you're doing what's called combat jiu-jitsu. That's striking. And then there's no, like, you don't want to pull on like single digits, things that like purposely try to like that's unnecessary. And if anything, it's going to make me go harder.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We have the rule of not pulling on like single digits. You can grab a few fingers, but like pulling on single digits is no scratching and biting and stuff like that. Things that just really don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Things that don't stop the other person from hurting you. Oh. That's pretty much it. Like if you bit me, then I would still just choke you.
Yeah.
Or if you punched me, I would still just choke you. Like these things don't stop me from hurting you. They just hurt. So those are the rules.
Gotcha. So those are the things that are kind of just, that's like obviously out of anger. If it's not something that's going to stop me from doing what I need to do, that helps me to understand. So my real question was, so we've learned about you live at the gym, you know, you're always training. What does a typical week look like for you?
Okay. It's every day is pretty much the same, to be honest with you. I wake up in the morning and I go work out. First thing in the morning, I try to get a workout in just because the rest of the day can get kind of hectic. Like yeah. I'm like answering calls and trying to like work on my website and work on different things. So I like to go ahead and get my workout out of the way. Tuesdays and Thursdays, though, I teach a 6 a.m. jiu-jitsu class. So my workout comes after that.
Okay.
But typically, I get a workout in and then I have some time at the house before it's time to train. I usually train 2 times a day. A typical session lasts for like 2 hours. So the first hour is just drilling, just learning a move and repeating it over and over and over and over, or a set of moves. And then the next hour is like live rolling and stuff. So I'll work out, then I'll kind of do some work at home, and then I'll go train, go home, eat, shower, do some more work, and then come back for the nighttime to train again. And then we go home, sleep, repeat. Pretty much that's it. There's always some teaching class in between, but that's it.
Wow.
And so you mentioned previously that you know, were in the engineering field and it just wasn't for you. What about that wasn't fulfilling for you?
Honestly, I felt like I learned everything that I, one thing, first thing is I didn't use a calculator the entire time I was there. So I'm trying to figure out why I went through calculus 1, 2, 3, 4, didn't use a calculator, not one time, didn't solve a single math problem or any real like problem. I felt like school was a waste of time because every problem that I solved while working as an engineer was something I could have solved without like actually going through those courses. Yeah. Secondly, just having to do the same thing over, like get up, go sit in my cubicle, have these conversations with people that I don't really care for. Ooh. And like the you know, the office talk, I hate. Everything. I already don't like to socialize, but if you force me to socialize, it's even worse. Mm-hmm. So just having to do that every day and not learning anything. Like I wasn't learning anything new.
Yeah.
Barely. I mean, I would learn how to like deal with certain people, but that's about it. And so the difference is in jiu-jitsu, I learn something new every day. Even with moves that I think that I know, like there's always a way to fine tune it and make it just a little bit better. So I'm always learning something new.
And I think you said, so mechanical engineering was your like emphasis, right? Mm-hmm. So what did you envision it to look like? So when you chose it, like what drew you into that?
Honestly, I was aerospace before I decided to switch to mechanical. And okay. I just really liked the thought of, you know, airplanes and like flying and stuff. And I switched to mechanical because I was offered a scholarship. Ooh, in the field. And I was like, all right, I can get school paid for. I like cars. You know, I kind of like cars too. I can get down with a car.
Yeah.
And I was thinking more on the design side of things. I was thinking, oh yeah, I would get to design and model these different pieces. And what design really is, what they don't tell you really when you like jump into engineering, is you might be designing, you won't design a whole car. You'll design like the windshield wiper.
Right.
And it's just like, okay. This is not what I signed up for. It was a little bit more enticing. Like the idea of it was more enticing than like the actual job.
Right.
Yes. So like the actual vision of what you had was a lot different. But I see you bring a lot of other things to life in a different vision. So we see that you have a huge social media following over a few different platforms, over 500,000 likes on TikToks. How did you build your brand? Like, what was the biggest thing that helped you build that brand? And what's worked the best over the different platforms?
Honestly, I didn't even really know about brand building until my coach was like, hey, you need to start posting on Instagram every day. And I was like, every day? He was like, I like what you're doing with the fitness stuff, but you need to be more consistent.
Yeah.
And this was before I ever came up here to train. I was training at another place and he would drop in. And he's like, I like what you're doing, but I need you to be more consistent. He was like, you should post every day. And I was like, every day seemed like a lot. Now I'm like posting every day across multiple platforms. But the biggest thing that helped me build was just being consistent, like committing to every day, 2 times a day sometimes. Like, and really not just trying to like show, hey, it's me, I'm the athlete.
Yeah.
Try to provide some value to the people that are actually like vibing with my stuff. So the biggest thing on TikTok, especially because that one is like what recently like really took off.
Yeah.
The biggest thing was just being consistent and again, just providing value. So instead of just being like, hey, doing the little dances, doing TikTok dance and stuff, I'm here for that, but like, how can I help you is what like really helped. Like showing, talking a little bit about my story,
mm-hmm.
kind of blew up, answering questions about nutrition, fitness, all of those things draw more attention than me just saying, hey, it's me, I won this competition, I'm famous, look at me. So
right.
That's the biggest thing, being consistent and providing value.
I like it. And so we've, of course, been looking at all your social media platforms. Do you edit like all of your own content?
I do.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
How did you start learning how to do that?
Well, when I was deciding, when I was having my midlife or quarter life crisis.
Just turned 25.
When I was having my crisis at school, when I like pretty much was like, I don't know if I want to do this. Mm-hmm. I just started like skipping. I ain't gonna lie. I started skipping class and I would just sit in my room and like, I think I want to like get into fitness. Maybe I'll just be a coach and I'll do stuff online. And I was like, ooh, I want to be a YouTuber. So I started like Googling how to YouTube University, man. I started like I was on Adobe. I bought Adobe and I would just edit videos instead of going to class. I would just sit in my room and edit videos. And I just started learning. And my first couple of videos were terrible. They still are. Some of them are kind of terrible. But now I'm just like, I learned all of this on YouTube.
Yeah. I think that's one of the most beautiful things about people's like YouTube channels and their social media pages overall. Like when you do keep, like when you're scrolling, like when you're really lurking and you look at how they have like progressed from super entry level, don't really know what I'm doing just yet. And so, okay, like look at what they're doing now. And so I think that's one thing to be super like proud of.
Yeah. I look back at some of the videos and I'm like, oh my God, I should take this down. But I'm like, nope,
don't do it.
Yeah. Keep it up there. You know, might inspire somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah, growth is definitely everything.
Mm-hmm.
Although we've only been in a little bit, we can see the growth in ourselves. So like already. You say, all the creators out there, keep going for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And I just want to switch the topic just a little bit. But it's crazy because I was recently watched this show called Real Sports with Brian Gumbel on HBO, and they actually featured BJJ on the show, but in a different way than just like the sport itself. They're kind of talking about how police officers often are trained a lot to use their guns,
mm-hmm.
but they aren't really trained in hand-to-hand combat. And that's how, you know, a lot of situations become escalated, and then how BJJ specifically can help de-escalate a lot of situations. A lot less people will be injured, and then a lot less people will be shot because police officers are actually de-escalating the situation versus just shooting. So do you think like BJJ is like really impactful in that way as far as like de-escalating situations and can like potentially be useful like by police forces in the case of like some sort of escalation at all?
Yes, 100%. So we do, actually, there's a couple of gyms around. So I train at what's called Tent Planet Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. And a couple of our like sister gyms they do like what's called Blue Jitsu. And it's, if you're a cop, you can come train in a class full of cops. So it's not weird. Like, all right, to be honest with y'all, Tent Planet Jiu-Jitsu is known for like doing drugs, like smoking weed and stuff. So it's like, real weird to have a cop over here and then your homeboy over here that smell like weed.
Right.
So like we have classes for just specifically cops that want to come in and train, because we do believe that like if you can control a person, then there's no need to pull out a gun and shoot them, because you got the situation under control. And I agree. A lot of them, you'll notice we have cops that come in here all the time and you can tell they've never like combat, never like that. It's like you took a course over the weekend.
Yeah.
And
that's it.
That was it. Yeah. And so when you actually get into a fight, it's easy to get like, you know, it's easy to like raise the levels there and things go spiral out of control. And if you can't control it, then things happen for sure. So we try to teach them like I was saying earlier, like just calm down. You like, you're not gonna win the first couple of like, this is important for you to learn, but it's not going to be a weekend course where you learn it right away. Mm-hmm. I believe that all cops should train jujitsu to in order to do their jobs effectively. So yes, 100%. I agree.
I completely agree too. And I'm so glad that you said 10th. I'm so sorry, 10th Planet.
10th Planet, yep. 10th
Planet. Okay. I'm so glad that you all offer, you know, that class, because I do think that can make a huge impact on just everything that's going on, that's been going on, but is now brought to light.
Right.
But shifting gears again, so I want to talk about merch. So you have merchandise, you have clothing. So talk to us. She got it on right now. Talk to us about Choose Violence.
Wake up and choose violence. Yeah. So I feel like everybody's heard it before. Like, it's like, oh, today I chose violence. But I took it like a little step further. I was thinking, so at first I was like, wake up and choose violence. Like, I want you to get up and be motivated and like aggressively go after the things that you want.
Yes.
But also, you know, because I do jujitsu, it's also a cool thing to say. Like, we always come in here, especially for my 6 a.m. class. I'm like, oh yeah, we woke up and chose violence. It's 6 a.m. this morning.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's like two things. So one, I want you to like wake up and get violent about the things that you want out of life. Like, don't sit back and wait on them to come for you. Like, you go get it. Go get it. Get aggressive. Move with a sense of urgency. Like, you only got a little time to get what you need or get what you want. So move with a sense of urgency. But also, like, get violent, you know? Like, come in here and grapple and learn to control the violence, control the chaos. So yeah, we got hoodies, we got t-shirts.
Okay.
I'm actually having to restock a bunch of people. So I did a pre-sale.
Yeah.
And I bought like so many shirts, so many hoodies, and they're completely gone. So
I saw.
Yeah, I was super shocked. Every morning I wake up, there's like two or three requests to restock at least the hoodies.
Yeah.
So now we're going to try to drop again. And I'm thinking about just like making it a thing, like, merch wise, just doing like limited edition collections and stuff.
That would be
just because I think it'd be cool to do.
Yeah.
Well, let us know so we can get the plug. We can get we'd be the early birds. You know what I'm saying?
All right. I got you.
So we talked a lot about BJJ overall, but you do a lot more than that. You're also a certified personal trainer. Did that go hand in hand with BJJ? What made you get into that realm as well and make you want to get certified and help train people?
I actually started that first. I started getting into health and fitness before I started BJJ. Again, it was like one of those things where I just didn't want to go home after work and play the game and then just feel like crap. And, you know, like that comes with its own mental baggage.
Yeah.
And to deal with that, I was like, all right, the least I could do is like take care of my body and eat right. You know, at least I can feel good in that aspect. And I got into the gym in 2016 is when I was during the internship. I got into the gym and I was just like, I just fell in love with, you know, self-improvement overall. And I was like, all right, the next part of this is I need to control my diet. So I started like looking at nutrition, looking into what I needed to eat, not just like eating hot chips and pickles every day, which what I was doing before.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that helped me once I like got certified and stuff and started learning about, you know, taking care of people and making sure that I could like tell them the right information. That helped me with my strength and conditioning for jujitsu.
How do you go about getting clients as like a new personal trainer? Like, what's that process like?
So at first I was in college. So I was just like, you know, picking up people. They were like, hey, you look like you work out. You look like, you know what you're doing. Can you be my trainer? That's usually like, that's how it was at first. But now when I first moved here, I started running a fitness class. We ran something called a fitness tribe, and we would just get people in and we'd run like group fitness classes. And then I would get a couple of like one-off people that like, they liked the group classes, but they needed a little extra help. So then I would work with them privately. And now because my time is like all booked up really, and I can't be in a place at a certain time, especially when it's like not surrounding jujitsu, I just do online training. And so a part of me building my brand was so that I could reach out and help people from all over, not just, you know, people here in Decatur or people in Mississippi, like where I had to be somewhere. So now I just do online clients.
That's smart. That's the way to do it. That's the way to reach, you know, the biggest audience. Right. And I kind of wanted to shift back to what you just said about diet. So I had a question about that because we of course, as people know that exercise is like vital to just life and making sure your bones and your joints are going to be good as you age. But I've heard that diet can be like more important than the like physical aspect. So how much do you like agree with that? And then tell us more about your diet.
Okay. 100%. It's more important than stepping off in the gym because in order to step off in the gym, you need to feel good. Like,
yeah,
you need to be running on the proper fuel. I've had moments. Well, when I first stepped into the gym, I was running off of hot chips and pickles and my workouts were trash. I was breaking my body down and not giving it the fuel that it needs to build itself back up. And so I'm just like working in reverse, and you can't do that really, because eventually it's going to lead to, like, you might look good for a little while. You might have a little 4-pack going on if you got the good jeans and stuff. Yeah. That was me. I had like a nice little 4-pack, but you could see the fats kind of like spilling off the side just a little bit. I was like skinny fat. Uh-huh. And it just didn't help. And especially with sports, if you're going to play a sport then and like perform at the top level, mm-hmm. then you definitely have to control your nutrition. It's way more important that you control your nutrition as it relates to your performance, or you control your nutrition before you step off in the gym.
That makes sense. And so what are, I guess, if you were to give listeners like a few quick things, what are some major parts of your own diet? Like, what was that big change from hot pickles and chips? Like, what did you add in?
More vegetables. So I don't have a like super strict diet. Here are the few rules that I set for my diet.
Okay.
80% of what I eat is nice, like natural whole foods, single ingredient foods is what I like to call them. So hot chips has more than one ingredient. Rice is only one ingredient in rice. There's only one ingredient in chicken.
Okay.
There's only one ingredient in asparagus, broccoli, like all of those are single ingredient foods. So 80% of what I eat is great. And then the 20% of what I eat is whatever I want. Like, I don't sacrifice happiness and joy from like pastries and stuff like that in order to like get the physique or like feel good. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
If 80% of what you eat is good, then you're good to go. But I added more vegetables. I made sure that I had vegetables with every meal. These days I just do like spinach in an omelet or something. And then I have like some form of vegetable in lunch and breakfast. I mean, lunch and dinner. And then I started replacing some of the common snacks that I like to eat. So I really liked sodas growing up. And now I do like bubbly, and I'll do like juices, cranberry juice or something like that. And what else? Cakes and cookies and stuff like that. I had like yogurt with protein powder and like some chocolate granola, something to kill that sweet tooth. And the last rule that I set for myself is I can't start snacking on stuff until I've had like a really good meal. An actual meal, because most times you're not really like, you don't really want the snacks. They're empty calories. Like you're starving, but you got a taste for like some chips or something. That's not going to fill you. See if you have the taste for the chips after you eat a real meal.
Exactly. Because a lot of it may just be visual, because these chips are right here.
Yeah.
I that's the other thing, man. I cannot buy snacks and keep them in my house. I cannot do it. Because I know if I got a bag of chips, I'm not going to eat three and then put them back on the refrigerator. I'm going to eat the whole bag and then just look at the bag.
Exactly. It's about portion and also knowing yourself. So that's a very, very helpful tip. My last quick question about diet and whatnot. Do you think everybody can get abs?
I think so.
You really?
I feel like some people going to have to work a little bit harder than others.
Yeah.
But I think everybody can get abs. Think about it. Think about it from like an evolutionary standpoint.
Okay.
Where when we first, before we had the desk jobs, where we had to like sit down, before we had instant access to food and everything, everybody had to be fit because that was the only way you could survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can't outrun this thing chasing you, dead. If you can't go get your own food, gone. You out of there. like your body. So we eventually just evolved or devolved, whatever, you know, one might think.
Yeah.
Into like, you know, just eating whatever because it's right here, not moving as much. But I think our bodies were meant to move. And, you know, of course it was meant to be healthy. That's why we're here. Like,
right.
So.
Okay. Yeah. No more excuses for me.
Sorry, guys.
And so like a lot of what you talked about just has to do with a lot of consistency, right? Like you said, your routine is pretty consistent. It was like your workouts, like you mentioned your diet, things like that. Mm-hmm. Is there ever a time in which you just don't want to do this anymore? Or is it any time like you're not excited to work out or you just don't have the motivation? Like what keeps you going?
All the time, to be honest with y'all. This is why I tell the people, especially when I'm doing like live videos, people always ask like, how do you stay so motivated? I don't. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. There are at least two or three times a week I'm just like, man, I don't know if I'm feeling it, especially later in the week.
Right.
My body's already hurting. I've already had like four or five training sessions. I'm not motivated to go.
Yeah.
Not at all. I don't feel like it. I'm tired. Like, but I just set rules for myself of like, all right, no matter what happens, you're gonna go train. Like, just like you don't skip brushing your teeth.
Right.
You don't skip, you know, putting on deodorant or taking a bath or whatever. You don't skip eating a meal. Mm-hmm. You can't skip training. Like I set that as a rule, a hard rule for myself. So whether I feel like it or not, I'm gonna get up and go train. Like right now I'm getting ready to do surgery for my tooth or whatever. And I'm taking like antibiotics. Mm-hmm. And those will zap you more than anything. But yesterday I felt completely drained, but I drug myself in here and I started to train. It wasn't the best training session, but I got a lot out of it. So no matter what, I just commit to training.
Yeah.
No excuses, like you said. So now I'm about to start setting rules for myself. Mm-hmm. Like I got to do something every day, no matter what. Because if you could do it, we could do it too. So
I feel like that's the difference between motivation and dedication. Because yes, like if you're motivated, of course I can get up and do it. I feel good. I feel like empowered. But dedication is when you power through the lack of, you know, I don't want to do this. So I'm gonna have to pull some of that from Kaya.
It's a lot of days, man. Especially when you're getting later on in the weight cut where you're barely eating any food. Ooh. You having to drink 2 gallons of water to get this weight off of you, and you still got to come in and train with the same intensity. There's a lot of days where I'm just like, bro, I do not want to be here. Another good thing is I have teammates. I have coaches that hold me accountable. The people around me, they don't say, oh, it's okay to take a day off. They say, they talk trash. They're like, oh, look at you. Oh, you're so weak. Look at you skipping practice. Oh, you must be hungry or something. Like, we
talk trash to each other.
We talk mad trash.
Yeah.
I have a quick follow-up to that. Like, what is that process like of like cutting weight and like things like that? I have a friend that actually, he does Muay Thai and then he also does BJJ as well. And like, I remember one time he was preparing for a tournament. He had to be under a certain weight. He was fighting under his normal weight class. And every day I'm like, dude, I was like his motivation. Like, dude, you're too heavy today. Like you got to lose some weight. Like every day he ended up having to fight in a different weight class for that tournament because he didn't make the weight. But like, how is that process like as far as like making sure your weight is within the weight class you want to fight in and then like kind of like cutting in and making sure you're good to go for the fight?
So I'm also kind of new to that too. I usually fight at 125.
Okay.
But a lot of opportunities have been missed because I didn't get down to I didn't even think about going down to 115. And usually I sit around like 130.
Yeah.
I sit around at like 130. My normal walking weight is like 128-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I accept a fight or I accept that I'm going to be jumping into this tournament at 115, that it starts then, like immediately. It's like, all right, we gotta turn the switch because this weight's not going to come off on its own. And what I don't want to do is be dehydrated. There's a way you can lose 10 pounds in a day. You can lose 15 pounds in a day. Fighters do it all the time. But the thing with like jiu-jitsu, most jiu-jitsu tournaments, they have you weigh in the same day. So if you lose 15 pounds in water weight, then there's no way you're going to rehydrate in time. And you're just going to be out there dehydrated, which makes you weaker, slower, and just you have that mental fog. So immediately I started with my diet. So I started losing for this last tournament. This was the first time I really dropped down to 115. I lost, I went from 14% body fat to like 9.6, which is crazy low for a female. And I really don't like being that low for very long. So I dropped to like 9.6 body fat. Like abs were, I could not make them pop. Now they're kind of covered up a little bit, but so I started with my diet and exercise. So I dropped as much weight as I could, like safely with just, you know, dieting. And so I started limiting my calories, eating at a like a caloric deficit, eating less calories or burning more calories than I ate.
Right.
And then once I got to the point where it's like, all right, there's no more weight coming off if you continue to eat food.
Yeah.
The last week is when I start to cut water weight. So to cut water weight, you have to load water. And so the first 2 days you're drinking 2 gallons of water every day.
Oh my God.
Then you drop to the next day, you drop to like a gallon and a half. And then you just continue to drop gallon, quarter. And then the day of, you don't have any water. The day of weigh-ins, you're thirsty, you're hungry. If you've been traveling, you're irritated. And to get to like force the last couple of pounds out, you either have to like, you pretty much have to overheat yourself. So whether that be sitting in a sauna, I sat in a hot tub, or you see a lot of dudes in like trash bags, like these plastic sauna suits, running and shadow boxing, and they're just trying to sweat all the water out. So you overload your system with water, you mess up all the like electrolyte balance, the sodium balance, potassium, all of that, and you just start to sweat. So the whole week of training, you just sweating like it's nobody's business. Then you get it all out, and then the hard part is like rehydrating before the competition starts.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever go like the opposite way where you have to pick up weight?
I was supposed to do this really big tournament or this really big trials. It's called ADCC trials. Mm-hmm. And they only had 2 weight classes for women. And it was below 135 and above 135, which is crazy. Yeah, so I was going to try to pick up some weight. But then this other tournament called and was like, or they messaged me and was like, hey, you want to do this tournament for some money? And I was like, oh, yeah, no, I want to do this. And it's at 115. I'm close to 115. Yeah, I don't have to pick up weight. This is what we're doing.
Got you. And so Kaya, if there was one thing, so we've learned about, of course, training, about your background, and about what you do currently, but if there was one thing that's not widely known about Kaya J, would there be anything that you want people to know about you?
Let's see.
That's a hard question.
Yeah, that is a hard question.
I don't know about myself.
People don't know a lot about me. That's the thing. I guess is that people don't know a lot about, like, I'm really a loner. Like, I don't talk to a lot of people. Even my coaches and my teammates, they really feel like they don't know me. Because once we're done training, I will sit in my house. I don't go anywhere. I don't do anything. I train. I watch TV. I, like, watch my anime and stuff. And then that's it. I just repeat that whole cycle. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything else to me there, you know?
And of course, we will continue to learn just by, you know, following you. But that is something that is new. So outside of gym, a homebody, which is same.
And so with that being said, we're honored that you even hopped on here and talked to us. Yes. You know, I could not tell that you were a loner at all or to yourself. Definitely great conversation for sure. But where do you see yourself in the next few years, though? How do you want to grow professionally, personally, and where do you want to take just your brand and your whole career in the next few years?
Yeah, so I'm thinking on like the timeline of the like next 5 years. Mm-hmm. My sole like focus for the next couple of years is to get in the top ranks of jiu-jitsu. Like I've already started. So I said this like maybe like 2 years ago. I was like, I want to compete against the best, the top. And I'm already like busting into that scene and starting to compete against like the best girls in my weight class. And so I want to get to the top of the ranks. And in order to do that, of course, it's going to take a lot more training, a lot more focus on like my skills and stuff like that. But also, I would like to open up like a private facility, training facility, like a private one where I can just bring clients in with a like extra mat space so that I can like, you know, do my drills and have open mats and stuff like that. I'm looking to do that. And I'm starting to like near 30 at this point. So I guess I need to be thinking about a family and kids and stuff. It's on my mind, but I haven't thought too much into it. But eventually, yes, I want to have a family and kids. And so,
well, we can definitely help you with the career part. So so our last two guests on the show, we have one guest who just opened up a gym recently, and then a second guest who is a mental health performance consultant. And so we have the Invited Podcast directory with all contact information and everything if you ever feel like you want to reach out and ask questions.
Of course.
Yes. And so that was the last of our like serious questions. We have just a couple of our little segment rapid fire piece. And so we're going to transition into that. So you made it past the hard part.
All right. I don't know this rapid fire sound. It sounds intense.
You got it. No, this is going to be super simple. So for us looking at your social media pages, we saw an Instagram post. You had an album, Stevie Wonder's Greatest Hits. I was like, okay, she has taste. We also feel like you like Tyler, the Creator, quite a bit from what we've seen. Okay. So if you could only keep 6 musical artists or groups in your iTunes library, give me your top 6.
Oh, this is the hardest question y'all to ask. Man, I love music. I love so many different genres.
That's hard.
All right. All right, we're gonna go. I'm gonna keep Tyler in there.
Okay, got to.
I'm gonna throw y'all for a loop with this one. We're gonna go Bobby Womack.
Ooh, throwback.
Yes.
Man, this is hard. I'm thinking. Only 6.
Only yeah. 6.
I wasn't expecting Bobby Womack though. I feel it though.
I was listening to some Bobby Womack here recently, so I couldn't. I was like, man, this is a classic. Whoa.
The single.
I'm gonna throw Johnny Taylor in there.
Okay.
Sorry, had to do it. So we got Tyler.
Yeah.
Johnny Taylor, Bobby Womack. I'm gonna throw Mac Miller.
Yes.
Nice. That's a shocker, I'm sure.
No, I love Mac Miller. I feel
he
you.
He got range. It's yeah, the range.
He does.
Dang.
We got 2 more spots.
I know it's so hard. This is hard. We'll go Lauryn Hill. Nice.
That's a good one.
And Bob Marley.
I like this lineup.
Quite the range.
Okay. We got some.
I try to give me some range in there.
Yes. Okay.
And if you had to knock off just a few items off your bucket list, the next few on your bucket list, can you tell us what those would be? What do you want to knock off before you kick the bucket?
Skydiving in Dubai is one.
Okay.
I think that's my only one, to be honest with you. Skydiving in Dubai. Yeah, that's it.
Have you been skydiving at all? Like any nope. anywhere else?
You guys been skydiving?
Cedric has been. I have never.
I went a couple years ago. It was super fun. I did it here in Dallas, like 30 minutes outside of Dallas. And it was, I wasn't afraid at all. But then like once I started falling, like all the stuff they told us not to do, I was trying to like reach back and all type of stuff. But it was fun. I would do it again.
Okay. I feel like I'm going to be terrified.
There we go. So whenever she goes in Dubai, you can. Go help her out.
Yeah. I'll pull up.
All right. A few more questions. Most non-social media app that you use? Most used non-social media app?
Most used TikTok.
So it can't be social media.
Oh, okay. Oh, app that I use?
Yeah.
QuickBooks. I feel like I'm always in QuickBooks, to be honest.
Making sure your money is all
trying to make sure it's going where it's going.
I feel it.
If you could be present at one moment in history, what would it be?
Ooh, that's hard.
One moment in history. Ooh, can we circle back to that one? I'm thinking. I need to think
we
about
can.
It.
Okay. Yes. This one is a little bit easier. Best food spot from your hometown.
Best food spot. Also hard. I'm from Greenwood. What we got? Oh, bro, I honestly do not know. Best food spot. There's a place called No Way Jose. People tend to like it. Like, if I'm going to eat somewhere, I guess that's it.
What type of food they serve?
It's like Tex-Mex. So it's not that great, but people love it.
Okay, well, I love Tex-Mex, so.
Maybe the Waffle House. I mean, the Waffle House always hitting too.
It's undefeated. Undefeated.
Always a hit. So, okay, so we're still letting you think about the moment of history. So my next question, if there was, like, do you have any amazing books that you've read that you would add to our invited podcast book list?
Yes. I have the one that I feel like kind of changed the way I thought about, like, doing work and creation and, like, creating things, being a creative, is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. It's one of my favorites. It completely changed the way I thought about everything. It talks about resistance, and it gives resistance life. So there can be resistance in, like, doubting yourself. It's just a form of keeping you from like doing your art or like creating things. There's resistance in relationships.
Yeah.
Resistance. So it gives resistance a life form, and it talks about how it appears in the work and how it prevents you from creating things. And there's like this line in there about like Adolf Hitler. So he wanted to be an artist. He wanted to paint. And he, Stephen Pressfield says, it was easier for him to start World War II than it was to put paint on a canvas.
Wow.
So it talks about everything that comes with being a creative. And I really appreciate that book. He also has a sequel called Turning Pro. Really good one. Would suggest.
Okay. I've heard about the first one a lot. Like, I've seen that on a lot of like lists, like books you should read, top 100. So we're definitely going to add that to our list, and I'm going to put it toward the top of the list so I can defeat resistance.
Yes.
It's necessary. It's absolutely necessary to turn pro.
Definitely.
And so now you have to, we're going to circle back. You have to defeat this question. So
resistance.
Yeah, you got to beat the resistance. What one moment in history do you would you want to be present for?
I'm trying not to say like some, I don't want to be present for anything tragic.
Okay. Right.
I want to be present for, what would I like to be present for?
It doesn't have to be a long time ago either. It could be recent history, last few years.
To be honest with y'all, this is the first thing that came to my mind when you said like last few years. I would have liked to be present for this. It's a particular UFC fight. Okay. It's Masvidal versus Ben Askren. It's like first 5 seconds, he comes in and throws like this flying knee and knocks this guy out. And that I would have liked to be present for, because I paid for that and I definitely regret it. Because it was like the first 5 seconds. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, I just paid for this. But we were in the room, like our whole, like we had like a little watch party or whatever, and everybody exploded. I would like to be present for that one. Yeah.
I think I saw it. I'm pretty sure I've seen the clip of that, because I mean, it's only a clip. So I mean,
yeah. If you've been on Twitter, you probably have seen it.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to post it when we post.
Yeah, for real.
But cool. We just have a couple more to wrap up with. Like we talked about your following, we want to continue to follow you as you continue to grow, and we want our listeners to continue to do so as well. So where can people get tapped in with you? Go ahead, drop your social media handles, your websites. How can people schedule with you virtually? Go ahead, get the people all the goods.
All right. You can find me on TikTok and Instagram at Kaya.J. On YouTube, it's just Kaya J. And then my website is train.kayaj.com. And there we have, I'm actually working on releasing a membership site where you can get access to all my workouts, nutritional facts and advice, and like some recipes and stuff. And then you'll see like options for merch and how to get LinkedIn.
Very cool. And if you are listening only, it's K-I-A-Y-A-J. Mm-hmm. Okay. You want to end us off like you always do?
Sure. Well, I'll go ahead and do the honors. So this can apply to fitness, but just in life overall. What encouragement would you give to someone who is close to giving up on either their fitness journey, but just in any other aspect of life? What advice would you give to them to keep them going?
I would say everything that you want is closer than you think. Mm-hmm. Like, we tend to like overestimate how much we can get done in a day, and underestimate how much we can get done with just continuous work over a year, over 2 years, over three, even in a couple of months. Yeah. You can get so much more done if you're just consistent. Like, you don't have to try to do it all in one day. You won't see the results in one day. So don't, you know, not see the results and then give up on it.
Exactly.
Just continue, dedicate, put your head down and dedicate to showing up every day for a few months, and then look back and see if you're making progress, and then decide if you want to give up or not.
I love it.
I do too. And I've loved this entire conversation. Definitely been very insightful, very, very encouraging for sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, makes me think about my fitness journey and how I need to get back at it. But
that's the goal.
But yeah, regardless, I really appreciate you for coming on. We both do. And I really appreciate all of the great conversation. And to our listeners, that's another episode of the Invited Podcast in the book. We'll talk to y'all next week.
That's a wrap.